On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're being dragged straight to hell by smoke monsters in Netflix's Korean supernatural thriller Hellbound, following Jeff Daniels on the beat in American Rust, and we can finally talk all things Aes Sedai because the embargo for Amazon's Wheel of Time has finally lifted. See Sidene. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, a show that you unfortunately will not be able to listen to today. Yes, as of this week, all episodes of the show will be removed from your podcast service, but don't worry, because we'll be airing on Paramount Plus sometime in 2022. Let's fly. Joining me on the show, despite that fact, are my two co-hosts, TV's Boyd Hilton, and a woman who has just been appointed to the new role of Minister for Animation by the current British government, Beth Webb. Sake. How are you both?
Already tired.
Fair enough, fair enough. You've had a lot of me today, to be fair, because you were on Empire this morning, so you've had a lot of
you've
James.
Had a lot of me today.
Yeah, like Beth was just, when she agreed to be on the Empire podcast, so she does, this is 4 hours of Dyer, like genuinely.
And let's let the listeners in on the awful secret that we have. We're taking us 44 minutes at this point where we're actually ready to record this podcast.
But that's, you know,
due to one thing and another.
Yeah, it's not been great. Although having said that, if people haven't listened to the most recent Empire podcast, it does feature Beth's mum and dad. So if you wish to hear the podcast debut of Mr. and Mrs. Webb, then do listen to the latest Empire podcast.
Why can't we get
podcast?
Mr. and Mrs. Webb on this podcast?
Maybe we can get my gran on or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Do your parents listen to this podcast, Beth?
They do now.
Okay, good. Good.
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Webb. Loved having you on Empire. So do we wait for news or do we get straight into this Star Trek shit?
The vein is already going. The blood is in your eyes.
I mean,
wait a minute. Is this a revolutionary change in the format and structure of the podcast?
What do we get into this particular burning issue? Well, I'm just thinking if people didn't understand the introduction, my slightly passag dig at Paramount.
Obviously, just ag.
Just general ag. We did discuss this last week and we speculated as to why Netflix were conspicuously quiet about the absence of Star Trek Discovery. And yet now we know it's because they no longer have access to Star Trek Discovery, because not only did season 4 not arrive as promised, but the whole of Star Trek Discovery was removed from Netflix, has been expunged, deleted from the entire service. It is gone. There is no more Star Trek Disco. Sorry, Beth. And it will be arriving on Paramount Plus at some point in 2022 for those of us who don't live in the US and Canada. For people there, then it's fine because it's on Paramount Plus over there. But for the rest of us, we're all going to have to wait.
So Paramount Plus is coming to the UK?
Though it should be made clear. So Paramount Plus is going to be part of the Sky package. Now, Boyd, you're the expert on all things Sky / Now. So is it going to be part of the base package? You're going to have to pay extra for it, like Stars Pay. What's it going to be?
No,
how are we going to get it?
So funnily enough, Peacock, another news, this was also going to be mentioned in news by me.
It's all thrown up.
I'm all thrown by this.
Podcast is
this last bit of format change.
Yeah.
Peacock arrived this very week, or last week, sorry, now by the time this podcast goes out, on Sky, on the Sky / Now platform, and it's just arrived as a kind of bonus thing. So it's like if it's there for you in
like
your,
an early Christmas present.
Yeah, in the homepage, if you like, or whatever the fuck it's called, of Sky Q, which is what I use, it says there Peacock. And then if you go to the app section, which is where Amazon Prime Video is, or Prime Video, what the fuck they're calling themselves now.
the channel formerly known as Amazon, yes.
Yeah. Even though, by the way, right, because someone tweeted us about this. Oh, God, there's so many diversions. But I didn't mean to say this. Someone was saying, because I was talking about how Amazon Prime Video, some of the PRs now want us to call it Prime Video for their, but their originals, they still call them Amazon Originals.
Okay, that's,
it says Amazon Originals.
And they're not Prime Video Originals.
It's like, well, they're Amazon Originals on your Prime Video thing. Whatever. So there's that. So in the Sky Q, anyway, platform, which is what I use, there's a bit called Apps, which is where Prime Video is, and Netflix, so Netflix gets its own section. So it's kind of like, it's you don't have to pay extra for it, though, which is good. And I'm assuming that that's how Paramount Plus will arrive, in a similar style to Peacock. And actually, I don't understand, because Peacock, they did not, so they announced a few months ago that Peacock was going to arrive at some point.
Right.
On Sky Q, same as they did a few weeks later with Paramount Plus. They didn't even, and so, for example, last week when we recorded the podcast, we did not know that it was going to arrive.
No.
It was literally about a day's notice, and they said, oh, you'll all get, Peacock will arrive on your platform. Well, I don't understand why they can't, with Paramount Plus, bring it forward, whenever, just start the Just give us it on the fucking platform. It shouldn't be too complicated.
There's almost certainly some sort of territorial licensing issue or reasons. I mean, there's bound to be stuff.
But sure.
I don't imagine it all hinges, much as I think it all hinges around Star Trek, there's obviously more to it than that.
But what I do think, though, is I think they fucked it. It's a real fuck up because they, you know, to announce that this is happening and then remove all the existing episodes from Netflix and then make us wait, as you say, months for into the next year before we get to see the next season, when they could have, if they really, I think, it's not beyond the wit of man, surely, and slash woman, to plan this and go, well, we'll somehow make it available.
Yeah.
We will bring it forward. And this is the big fuck up to me. And that's why everyone's so furious.
Because, well, it's also quite complex, isn't it? Because Netflix co-financed the series, didn't they? Like, so it's not just a distribution. Yeah. Like, they don't just have the rights to air it. They partly poured money into it. So now they've taken on the whole, Paramount have now taken on the whole financial burden of the show and exclusive broadcast rights. And we won't get Paramount Plus till next year. Hence, we are without Star Trek. But as a lot of people pointed out, you know, and I don't want to pigeonhole people in any way, shape or form, but I'm going to say if there is, I don't know, a demographic that maybe is more inclined to nerdery and piracy, I'm saying the Star Trek audience probably fits that Venn diagram somewhere. I'm saying a lot of these Trekkies are not going to wait. They're just going to find a way to get it either BitTorrenting or whatever the kids use, or they'll just use a VPN and get American Paramount Plus and watch it here in the UK, which I'm sure is not that difficult. So, it's. I think the problem with this is like it's been badly communicated. Like,
so
to drop
badly.
It, like 2 days. By the way, in 2 days' time, Star Trek will be deleted. Like, you know what?
And to leave us hanging. You know, to not let people know. I mean, us is one thing, but I mean, fans of the show, knowing that it was going to arrive in the States as usual, and then, you know, presuming that Netflix would show it the next day, as I did, and I wrote a preview about, as I mentioned last week in Hit Magazine. It's ridiculous that they didn't, and then they put the announcement out, which you spoofed in your magnificent intro. But it doesn't deserve to be spoofed because it's almost like they tried to make it possible. It's David Brent. It was a Brent moment.
It was very Brent. It will all be unified, and they're like, "Let's fly!"
Yeah. It's
like,
it's going to be great. We're going to make you wait months to see it. You losers.
There is no upside to this. There is no spin that makes this possible.
And by the way, at some point, I suddenly realised that Star Trek Discovery is the one I really, really liked and enjoyed as well. Every time we reviewed it, I think probably the first episode of the last few series. It's great.
The last season was less good than the others, but it's
still
been good.
Really inventive, you know, beautifully made thing.
Right.
And
sagely not watching a single episode of it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, you know, but it's annoying because it's just shooting themselves in the foot. The whole thing. And the other thing is, I mean, I could rant about this for hours, Beth, but it puts into real focus the problem with these streamers. It really does, doesn't it? It's like, you know, to originally we were all presented with the idea that Netflix was the home of everything, effectively, TV-wise. And it became too successful, really, almost for its own good. I mean, they wouldn't say this, but in terms of the industry and the way TV gets disseminated and distributed, and now they've got all the rivals, they've all got their own fucking expensive subscription services, and you'd have to be, and we're very privileged. You know, I feel incredibly lucky that I don't have to pay, you know, pay for some of them, others, because we're journalists and we get sent the stuff in advance. But for normal fans of TV who listen to our podcast, I think it's outrageous that they're expected to spend all this money on all this extra different content, even bearing in mind, I know that Paramount Plus and Peacock will be no extra charge, but if you want access, but if you didn't have access to them before, you're going to have to get Sky.
How is it going to affect, I don't know, how does it affect Now, for example? Like, if you're a Now person, not a Sky person, like, are you going to be able to get it there? How? Which package do you need? Is it the entertainment package? Is there an extra bolt-on package? Like, what is it?
I'm pretty sure it will be the entertainment package.
Yeah, you would think.
And I'm assuming that it is available now. I will double check, but I it's an assumption I'm making.
I mean, I understand what kind of Sky are doing, because Sky is at risk of becoming a very anachronistic service, isn't it? But for the simple reason that it's very expensive to get satellite TV, whereas all the streaming services are a lot cheaper. Yeah. And even now, if you go for the three packages plus the 4K thing, it's still only, what, 35 quid a month. So it's a lot cheaper than getting a full satellite service. And if the HBO, or when the HBO deal does expire, I think Sky, then there's a slight existential issue there. So obviously getting all these other services as part of that offering, I guess, bolsters their offering and makes it more worthwhile, getting sort of future-proofs it slightly.
100%. But in a way, they've kind of ended up, because they are getting these other services all in one place, because you can get them, you know, and sometimes you have to pay extra, sometimes you don't. They have packages that include Netflix within the monthly fee, for example. Yeah. And they are getting Peacock, and we are getting Paramount Plus, albeit next year, unless they change their mind miraculously the next, by the time this podcast goes out. So in fact, it could end up with them having the most, the easiest, simplest solution.
Well, cause, yeah,
but it's yeah. still pay TV. You're still yeah. paying for it, whether yeah. you get paying for your subscription to Sky or your memberships to Now or whatever. You're still paying extra for it on top of when you were just watching Star Trek Discovery on Netflix.
Yeah.
So it is... It's fucking complicated, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
the bottom
line.
Yeah. So to keep track of this stuff, well, to not, and as you said right at the beginning, to get back to that simple fact, we did not know where right. we could watch this major, huge show with a massive fan yeah. base, one of the most iconic franchises in TV history. We had no idea yeah. where we were going to watch it, like the week before we're supposed to
until
air.
Literally like four yeah. or 5 days before it broadcast. We yeah. had absolutely no idea if or when.
So I'd be interested to know what was going on behind the scenes there, because it must be...
It must
something
be complicated.
Pretty dramatic yeah. for it to drop, for them not only to just not communicate that whatsoever, but to withdraw with things like when Heat's gone to print, which is a massive source of entertainment news, mm-hmm. like to misinform people and to let down publications like that, to get a little yeah. bit tradey. Something pretty shitty must have gone on.
It must have been the complexity of the negotiation, sure. And as you said, the fact that Netflix has paid for, I mean, they must have paid for season four, mustn't
you would
they?
Think,
to a
yeah.
large extent.
And, so and I now, don't know what.
So that, imagine that conversation, so, that negotiation. Mm. Well, sorry, we've paid for this fucking thing and now you don't want us to show this thing. And they must have compensated them massively. And this is all, you know, there should be a drama. I want a Ryan Murphy.
This Ryan Murphy bet.
Yeah. I want Ryan Murphy to make a 10-part series.
Stop giving him the
about
end. Stop giving him rope.
Netflix
actually,
versus Star Trek.
Netflix versus
with
Paramount. Star Trek. Trekking. Netflix v. Paramount. American
Trekking.
Story.
American Streaming Wars.
American Streaming Wars.
God.
It is a fascinating... story. And that, yeah, God knows what it must have been. Negotiations must have been going on to the last month, unless they just completely don't give a shit about what people are planning to watch and what people need to know.
But it's what you said about Sky earlier is actually quite an interesting one, which is the holy grail of this is integration, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's bringing these disparate threads together. And I think Apple TV do it decently, like they try and unify them within that app. And I was playing around with the Amazon Fire thing, sorry, the Prime Video Fire Stick. I was playing around the Amazon Fire Stick recently, and that tries to sort of simplify things together. And Sky Q, again, is another way of kind of drawing things together. But it's just, it gets to the point where you don't want to wade through like acres and acres of awful UI, sorry, Amazon, to find the thing that you want to see. Like, because sometimes it's just like, where the fuck is this thing hiding? I don't want to be playing Where's Wally. I just want to watch something. Where is it? It's very upsetting.
All of them have. I find all of the like the home pages of weird. Some like Netflix. Sometimes the biggest show that you think, well, you assume in your mind it's a big show, and it takes ages to find it. Sometimes it's you know the because they're also reliant on technological issues of ways of discovering stuff that is clearly flawed, heavily flawed.
Yeah, these algorithms are much more concerned with
algorithms. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
Making you watch the things they want you to watch, as opposed to the stuff you are trying to watch.
Yes.
It's a slightly.
We just need to go back to terrestrial telly. We need to go back to four channels.
Four channels. When I were a lad, Beth.
Yeah.
Three channels. And you were thankful for it.
We want to go back to four terrestrials.
I genuinely remember the day the Channel 4 launched. It's actually true.
I remember when Five launched, Spice Girls launched Channel 5.
I remember that. That was much later. Channel 4, the first thing I saw on Channel 4 was some kind of war film, and I remember a bomber flying over the sea in black and white. I don't know what that was. Perhaps someone can tell me. Don't know.
But yeah, four channels, terrestrial, flip back and forth. Everything you need.
Yeah, everything
Radio
you need.
Times with your marker.
That's it. Let's go back to that. Fine. VHS, bring it back.
I do wonder whether in, you know, what it's going to be like in 5-10 years, like whether it'll be like
it'll just be like a constant ether surrounding you powered by Amazon, not Prime, not Video, and you just have to like blink at what you want to watch and it'll like come at you.
I do think weirdly, like services like Sky might be onto something, which is splurge a load of cash to just get as much as you can under one roof.
Because for
some people, especially like if you're slightly, I don't want to be ageist anyway, but if you're not particularly tech savvy, if you are quite a bit older, it's so baffling. And then I just want to watch a TV show. Yeah. Where do I find it?
You know, not ageist. I haven't got a fucking clue. Like, I really don't.
I mean, to be fair, Beth, you've only had a TV for what, 6 months? So I understand that there's a learning curve here. So.
Oh, to know where to watch, and the other thing someone pointed on Twitter I saw, which is absolutely true, is this whole idea that you know, we can now watch everything somewhere at the flick, at the touch of a button, and it will stream and we can watch it in our own time, is also a complete fiction, because of course things get, not just Star Trek, but loads of things get taken off one service and then you wait for it to land on another. And sometimes, so one of the interesting about Peacock arriving, for example, is that there are loads of Peacock shows that are already like Sky comedy shows. Mm. So now they're late branded. It's like Saturday Night Live, I was looking at. I was thinking, oh, so they've got, you can watch Saturday Night Live, which is on Sky comedy, but it's also now on Peacock.
And
it's
isn't an Friday Night Lights now
all
on?
All of Friday Night Lights. All of House is on there.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You should watch it. It's brilliant.
You should definitely watch it. Yeah. Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Right. Now, all of these, but some of these things have been branded as part of a different Sky channel. Is it the same thing? Is it exactly the same HD transfer? I'm like, it just adds another layer. It's fucking confusing. Yeah.
And Friday Night Lights is on all four as well, I think.
Yes.
So it's in both places.
Yeah, it's in both places.
Yeah.
So it's really confusing. And I just think it's, we've sold the idea of the freedom to watch stuff in our own time and to binge stuff, but it's actually, it's becoming increasingly clear that it's a bit like, it's a bit scary, this whole world, and confusing.
Yeah.
And not, and I don't feel free about it at all. And I'm like, I've got mostly free access to all this stuff one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're a normal consumer, you know, I mean, it is bewildering.
And add to that the fucking laptop wired contraption necessary to watch Dexter screeners, and you know, the whole thing just becomes quite difficult to deal with.
You started on that.
I got another one. I will not name the show. I actually won't this time. Another show came through on that same cursed streaming platform, and I was absolutely incandescent about it. I was furious.
Also, I watched the thing the other day. This is so first world TV. This is beyond. I mean, this is literally just spoil TV critic ponts.
I mean, that's
complaints. Yeah. But I got a screener the other day. You know, you were saying last week about how you were getting fed up with watching things with Boyd Hilton. I had one the other day where the whole top quarter of the screen is taken up by saying when the embargo is on this thing. It literally was like embargo episodes 4, 5, 6, and then my name, and constantly throughout the whole thing, not taken off at any point throughout the whole fucking thing. I felt like I was reviewing my own embargo notice.
I don't know quite what the point is of that stuff, because I kind of feel like, does this stuff that's sent to critics, I mean, how often does it ever really get pirated? Yeah. I respect Netflix, who are just really subtle with their watermarking on it. It's very small. It doesn't interrupt the show. Like, I had to watch all of Wheel of Time with my name across the center of the screen in very, very large letters.
I'm sure you didn't quite enjoy that.
I mean, yes, being a part of Wheel of Time in every single way.
I mean,
lovely,
if you could have your name imposed on Dune when it arrives, I'm sure you would.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Wow. We all right. Well, so that was the entitlement segment. We've now covered that, I think. Yeah. Shall we move on to what we've been watching? And speaking of entitlement, so I've been watching something that I cannot talk about, because which both of you know, but I cannot talk about. I got to see some early episodes of something yesterday, which isn't airing until quite a bit into next year, and I was over the actual moon about it. So, but it's a secret.
That was fascinating. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I mean that
is just literally boasting. Pointless boasting about something.
Right, so I can't talk about what it is. So let's get on to what you've been watching.
I mean, oh my God.
That's throwing me right through a leap.
Live review of your terrible accent little joke.
Well, the best part of that is because the accent is so terrible, people are still like, I still have no idea what he's talking about. Anyway,
that was dreadful,
The other thing I've been watching, Boyd, is I followed you down the Sinner rabbit hole on iTunes. And I'm now, I would say, up to date. So I think we've had 5 or 6, I can't remember how many I've watched. Well, it's really good, isn't it? It's no spoilers for the inevitable review that we will do.
It's really good.
I'm enjoying the cinema.
Yeah, same, I forgot about
it. You're buying off Apple.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it's on iTunes.
Yeah, it's pathetic, isn't it? Yeah.
It's not pathetic.
No, it's not. It's amazing.
It's just annoying that is another way that you have to watch. Yeah. That's another variation on it.
Or if we weren't such entitled twats, we could just wait for it to appear on Netflix. But
that's another random thing, by the way, that, you know, the shows that arrive on iTunes that are on other streaming platforms, not Apple streaming platforms. So it's a USA show, and it's on iTunes, and some other shows that aren't on similar channels don't pop on iTunes. I mean, Star Trek Discovery might be on iTunes for all now. Who knows? It might end up. Could be. It's possible. Well, strange
things
happen.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now he's
now I'm excited.
Yeah. But I mean, it's possible. These things happen.
I'm 100% checking to see.
Yeah. Exactly. We have to check. But yeah, it's really good, isn't it? I think it's up there.
Well, no need to review that one now.
Yeah.
What have you guys been watching this week?
Actually, not that very much, that said. And I do have to be really annoying and say that I watched a few episodes of something that I can't talk about. Really fucking enjoyed it. But in spite of, I was just saying, because James put me onto it because I had to do it for an interview and was like, oh, I'm good, because I thought I'm really excited about this one. And I was like, oh, Christ, here we go. And then I watched it and it was actually really, really good. So, yeah, I'm also joining this fucking annoying camp of stuff I can't talk about. But I watched that, finished the other two, which was the comedy I was speaking about last week, but I haven't been able to watch very much, partly because, again, another week where everything is over an hour long and like really, really stuff that you have to invest in. So I've had to watch that. Not that it's going to cloud my criticism of it mostly.
That's a very James complaint, by the way. That well, the really shows long. You're saying the shows we're reviewing on this podcast are too long. That is classic James. And let's just say,
what is happening?
I mean, there's one show that he hasn't even bothered watching that he could easily have plenty of time to get hold of.
I don't know how you were going to do that. I was like, it doesn't appear to me when I watched this. And Bob was like, oh, it's the publicist. I was like, boy, it's 10 o'clock at night.
Or the next morning. You've had all morning to do it. Don't tell me you've been recording other podcasts.
I mean, whatever, I have.
So yeah, just I'm sorry, that was not much of an answer. And also I've had to watch those Tom Cruise films this week for the Empire ranking.
You have.
So it's a dud week for me. I'm so sorry, but the other two is really, really fun and on 4OD, and I would suggest that you watch that.
Does this mean you still haven't watched The Goop Show?
Of course I haven't. Stop. Like, why have you? Like,
I'm never going to watch it.
You know what? I forgot, actually. After you'd been on about it, yeah, which was so weird.
Did you watch it?
No. I started watching it. It was too much. I can't.
It's awful.
I couldn't face it.
Really? How far did you get?
Oh, well, literally about 5 minutes into the first episode. Yeah. I mean, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's comical. It's basically, yeah, couples talking about inserting things.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, by the way, that just on Succession, that everyone seemed to go absolutely crazy for last week's episode, which was the annual shareholder meeting episode, which was, so because again, you know, fucking privileged twat of the year award, but we got sent 7 episodes each, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
So, and so you forget, because I binged all those in one go. I think I watched them all twice, actually. So I then went back to remind myself how good this episode was, which is brilliantly entitled Retired Janitors of Idaho.
Oh, and it was so fucking good.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. But then I'm saying, though, as brilliant as the episode was, and loads of people saying this is the best episode so far, and they may be right, but Too Much Birthday, which is next week's one, episode 7.
Is that next week?
No, so not the one. So as this comes out on Monday, not that one.
Yeah.
The one after, that is the birthday one, episode 7.
I thought, it's not. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it is. Too Much Birthday. And that is,
isn't my favorite.
It? That is the favorite. That is, I mean, I think you ain't seen nothing yet, basically. If you thought that one was amazing, wait till you get to this one. So I wanted to mention that. Tiger King. I've been watching Tiger King 2.
I've heard quite
Baskin's
a lot
Robin.
I've heard quite a lot of backlash about this. People saying it's quite, it's ethically shady, but I've heard this was pretty shameless.
Do you know what? I started watching it and I was totally on the ethical shamelessness of it and the kind of exploitativeness of it and all of that. And I was thinking, oh, this is bad now. And, you know, I think I'm fed up with the whole story and all these horrible people being not glamorized. I mean, it's almost the opposite of being glamorized in a way. They're being held up for ridicule.
Yeah.
You know, in many ways, I think, anyway. And you can't but ridicule these characters. People like Joe Exotic, who is in prison, who is featured on, like, you know, Zoom chats from prison, by the way, throughout.
I'm surprised.
And all his associates and lovers and ex and husbands and exes and business partners, they're all, most of them are, you know, what people euphemistically call larger than life. They are, but they're, you know, Carol Baskin, you know, all of these people are preposterous to some way, to extent or another. Yeah. And you can watch it with that, from that basis, kind of almost in a, like it's a comedy, like it's a real life comedy playing out. And of course, there are still, as far as I'm aware, one if not two fictional scripted versions of this story to come. But then, I started actually watching it, and it is still an absolutely fascinating story.
Really?
It just, and I couldn't stop watching it. Okay. So I have to credit the filmmakers, he says quickly, Eric Good and Rebecca Chalkin, for they know what they're doing. Yeah. The way they structured the original was brilliant. Yeah. I have to say. Did you watch all the first?
Do
you remember how they kept back certain like facts? Like some people who ended up being dead, for example, in case anyone hasn't watched any of it yet, there are still people out there, I won't spoil it, but they're very clever in parceling out, which is, I guess, you know, one of the rudimentary keys of making documentaries, but nevertheless, some people don't do it better than others. And I think they are that, you know, there are a lot of different characters in this story. There are a lot of different kind of avenues and blind alleys and kind of details. But the way they structure it is very clever and smart, and it is incredibly addictive viewing. And even though I hate a lot of these people, and particularly the way they exploit these brilliant animals, these beautiful animals, and it is exploitation, it's still an extremely gripping story.
Yeah.
And you still want to know what happens now. And will, you know, so that part of the series is following the Tiger Group's campaign, his supporters' campaign to get him pardoned by Trump. And you almost get that reminder. It's mentioned in the Trump press conference. And you've got that partly reminder that America under Trump was what that was like. Yeah. I know, you know, I think it wasn't that long ago, but it was a very different mood and tone.
Yeah.
And a reminder of that is fascinating. And then you meet other people you didn't even meet in the first series who have like exes, ex-lovers, ex-partners of Joe Exotic. And you catch up on his current people who are still kind of obsessed with him, or why people are obsessed with him. It covers Carol Baskin and what, you know, how the awful time she's had. She gets, you know, the abuse she's had from people who are still banging on about her having something to do with the death or disappearance of her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Oh, and it is endlessly gripping. I found it endlessly gripping. I couldn't stop watching it. So I can't really, you know, take a kind of big moral stance on something that I actually had to carry on watching, because it would be, you know, it would be gratuitous of me. But there are some amazing moments still.
Really?
Like, you know, remember that Carol Baskin went on Dancing with the Stars, for example. You know, Carol, the equivalent of Strictly.
Yeah.
You know, this woman who's like complaining. She's still, as far as I'm aware, in legal dispute with Netflix
she's
over the second season.
With everybody at the moment.
With everybody, And he's not happy about the way she's been treated by, and now she goes on Dancing with the Stars as a celebrity, you know. And she wants us to take herself seriously as this conservationist, looking after the animals that Joe Exotic exploited. It is endlessly fascinating look at the insanity of this whole world.
Have you seen the stuff where Daisy May Cooper has been hiring Carol Baskin to record threats to her publisher?
Yeah, fantastic.
It is amazing, because allegedly Penguin are not paying Daisy May Cooper of this country fame to the last like check for her book, for her publishing deal. So she's getting Carol Baskin. She's communicating solely through Carol Baskin and these recorded threats to Penguin. It is fantastic. It's absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah. Oh, and Loose Women pop up at one point. There's a clip of Loose Women in the, which I was not expecting, in Tiger King.
James
is looking askance at the whole thing.
Well, it's the collision of things I don't care about together is, you know,
you
magnifying
watch?
My... No. Never. Nor will I, ever.
Of course. There's also a place, sorry, I keep thinking of things I noted down. There's also one of the Tiger King blokes is now in charge of a club called Sausage Castle.
Is that where you went on Saturday night?
Yes, when I went clubbing last weekend, it was to Sausage Castle.
It was fun that we were, but I was in a club as well.
Were you actually?
Genuinely,
I thought you were just being incredibly sarcastic.
I was being sarcastic as well.
I'm the old one here. I fell asleep at 10 to 9 on Saturday night.
I left before 4. I mean, I got back at 2:30, I think,
That's funny.
Yeah. It was in fashionable East End, Hackney.
Oh, ooh, I was in Sloane Square.
What you've changed?
Clubbing in Sloane
Square.
Was this
like an extended date?
No, it was nothing like that. When we went with some friends, we went to a nightclub, as the youths call it, for tacos, because it did tacos. Why? I didn't choose it. I just went along for the ride. Ended up going there. There's a whole thing where they have to take your driving license when you go in and scan it through a machine. I was like, no. When I last went to a nightclub in the late 1980s.
There may be a whole thing at that place, but
was
a whole thing.
Maybe it's a Sloane Square thing. But yeah, so they had to, and so we went there for tacos, and then there was a point when, obviously we were the only ones there because we got there at like 11 or something, and that's quite early for a nightclub. And when it started to fill up and they cranked the music up, I was like, I can't hear what people are saying, we need to leave. So we went to a hotel bar and hung out there for a while.
So you kind
so
of
I wasn't at the nightclub before. I went clubbing.
You were at the nightclub eating tacos.
I went clubbing and I got in at 4 a.m. And those two statements are 100%
true.
Now
we're getting the truth.
They're just not.
It's all
part of the same sentence.
Yeah. That's more. Yeah, that was like how. Yeah, you not be able to speak because it's too loud. Yeah. And
when I was in the bar, when I was in the club, I was literally sitting in the corner eating tacos. And then when the tacos were done, I was like, can we go now? We are here for the tacos. The tacos have been eaten. Let's now depart from this nightclub in Sloane Square.
We're
I'm
on a tabletop with Ricky Gervais, probably, and you're there eating a taco on a crowded dance floor.
Yeah, Russell Tovey. It was Russell Tovey.
Of course
it was. It was his 40th, yeah.
Is he Doctor Who?
I no idea, generally no idea, but do you know what? There were so many, let's just say, it's the Sin cast members there, right?
Oh, obviously. That must have been so much fun.
Yeah, there were loads of, a couple of other really great actors there. So, and I did say to someone at one point, if the next Doctor is not in this room right now, I will be amazed. But I didn't go from one to the other asking them. I thought that would be
intrusive. I feel you've kind of shirked your responsibility as a pilot TV journalist to get the exclusive on a nightclub on Saturday night.
Yeah. And just, such is the state of, you know, giddiness and let's face it, drunkenness. That I probably if I'd have asked, I would have found out. Yeah, would have kept to myself though. I'm very good at that.
You've probably forgotten.
Like the famous story I told you. Must have told the story about when Matt Smith showed me a picture of himself on the set of the Doctor Who anniversary special.
I don't think you did. No.
Oh yeah, in Soho House one night, very very late. I think it was like 2 a.m. or something, and it was in the toilet of Soho House. And Matt Smith, who I met a couple of times, hosted a few Doctor Who, you know, season launches and things. He showed me the picture of him and Tom Baker on his phone, which was a massive secret.
Matt Smith just don't give a shit, does he?
And he was like, yeah, don't tell anyone. How amazing is this? I was like, that is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I kept it absolute secret and didn't tell anyone. I don't think he quite realised that, you know, he remembered that he'd shown me. Because he likes to laugh, Matt Smith, that's for sure. That was one of the great moments ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's very funny.
Yes, our Saturday nights were different, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, there was a lot of drag in my Saturday nights.
I'm very jealous. Yeah. I want to be at that party eating a taco.
Yeah, I think the two things combined would probably work well. Yeah. Yeah. Should we have a listener question? Beth, would you like to introduce this week's question?
I mean, yes. All right. Natural. That was so
That's
simply.
Natural. And it's in no way because my phone isn't here and I can't look at it. But carry on.
All right. It's from Gareth Brooks. Question for the pod. This has probably already been asked in a previous listener question, but perhaps for new listeners like myself, what is the greatest ever pilot episode of a TV show and what is the worst pilot that actually was an amazing show?
I imagine we have at some point talked about this before, but given how long we've been doing this podcast, I genuinely don't remember. So sure, let's do this again. So what are the greatest pilots of all time? That's quite a tall ask. I often find that the second part of this is quite interesting because pilots have to do so much heavy lifting. You do very regularly get quite laboured pilots that become great shows. It's tricky, isn't it?
Like, it is tricky. And I do love to see the transition from the pilot to the money. Mm. Like the hairstyle suddenly glossy, high, beautiful, like the sets much better. But some of them really do set, like, the worst for me, I would say, which went on to be an amazing show, was The American Office. And that's not to say it was a really bad show, but it really did. I mean, it's indicative of the whole first season of The American Office in that it really did try to kind of coast off the back of The Office, like shot for shot in some cases. And it was only when it started to do its own thing that it became really, really good. But off the back of that pilot, I was like, what was the point of this? Really, what was the point of this? I was really uninvested. And now I love it. Mm. I love The US Office. That was probably the worst for me in terms of in terms of setting the tone for a show. That was probably the worst.
Similarly, I was thinking Parks and Recreation had a very...
But that was the whole first season, wasn't it?
Well, first two seasons, but the pilot was particularly not mediocre, just mediocre, introducing too many characters and...
And it was caught up in the concept because that was supposed to be, I feel like it was supposed to be loosely tied to
The
Office,
wasn't it?
Yes, it
was, it was a very similar situation, I think. And I think Parks and Rec took even much longer than The Office to find its feet and to become a...
Oh, I loved it in the second season.
Do you like the second season? Okay. I mean, I haven't gone back and watched it, I have to say, the second season, so maybe I should. Maybe I'll have a look. And the other sitcom, legendary, not amazing, pilot was Seinfeld, which was the Seinfeld Chronicles.
Say that, right?
Because I'm very predictable, and my answers, in the same way that when Buffy used to be the answer to every single listener question, no matter what it was. What's the best English period drama? Well, Buffy had an episode. But I do answer Seinfeld pretty much to everything. But the pilot episode, which was called the Seinfeld Chronicles, and introduced the whole idea that Jerry was a stand-up comedian, and how does he get his inspiration for his jokes and his bits was the kind of loose idea of it.
Yeah.
But it's just a very slow, this pace you notice.
Yeah.
Again, similar to what I was saying about Parks, I think the first 1/2 seasons of Seinfeld are very slow and clunky, and there's brilliant moments in them.
Yeah,
and George is a brilliant character right from the off and all that, but it definitely suddenly flies. It starts flying in the third season completely. But the best, I think, Lost, because my feelings about Lost, as I've expressed many times, that it totally fucked up the ending. But and the whole of the last season, and pretty much the whole of the most penultimate season, when it went parallel worlds and all that. But that opening episode is
incredible,
astonishing, that kind of changed TV.
That was like a landmark for television, and at a time when I was still Billy Four Channels, basically life changing.
It was on the fourth of your Billy Four Channels.
Wednesday nights, I think it was at like 9, and I used to live for Wednesdays at 9. I used to live for Lost on a Wednesday night on Channel 4.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It was phenomenal, yeah.
Yeah.
Just so ambitious and everything. And in fact, particularly in drama pilots, I think, particularly in maybe fantasy sci-fi ones, where they put everything, all the effort into that pilot, and actually things tail off quite quickly. I'm not saying that did happen with Lost. I still think the first 3, maybe even 4 seasons of Lost were pretty impressive. But there are a lot of shows where that put a huge amount into that opening episode, and they do explain the high concept and the interest of the cast, and then it kind of becomes a bit of a letdown 2 or 3 episodes in. But Lost was
huge.
Massive, yeah.
They were going to kill Jack off, weren't they, after the first pilot?
Yes.
Which is interesting. So Lost, Sopranos has an amazing pilot with the ducks and the swimming pool, I think is absolutely wonderful. And the conversations with the therapist and just instantly walking into that world feels so exciting. And meeting that character for the first time. I don't know, there are certain things, you know, when people say, oh, I'm going to start watching this for the first time, I'm going to watch this for this, I'm going to cinema to see this for the first time, and you feel actually a little bit jealous that they get to experience that for the first time again. And that was definitely Sopranos.
Breaking Bad has a great first episode. In the same way, like the concept, they introduced the concept and the core kind of characters brilliantly. It starts at the end, of course, Breaking Bad, and then flashes back.
Oh my God,
it's almost like everyone's decided they had to copy that format because that became prestige TV's narrative trickery, which they employed very, very brilliantly all throughout Breaking Bad, really. But certainly in that pilot, in that first episode, it's astonishing. Of course, we haven't mentioned The West Wing yet, because I think we just assumed that.
It's just the correct answer for absolutely everything. I don't mention The West Wing pilot, mainly because of my secret shame that I watched it when it first aired and went, didn't carry on watching it.
Course.
But we don't talk about that, but we pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because it was very long and I was young and stupid.
Of course.
But it
is one of the all-time great pilots.
It is.
We watched
absolutely
it back when we did our West Wing special.
Indeed.
Last year. Was that this year? Last year, I can't remember.
I mean, time has no meaning.
Yeah, time has no meaning. But I was because I hadn't. I don't think I'd rewatched that for years.
It's amazing.
I mean, I know you watch it.
I do. I genuinely did watch it. I think last week because I'm doing my annual kind of like plow through. I haven't talked about it here because I just assume that the assumption is that I'm always watching The West Wing at one point. So
that is incredible. But it is a brilliant hour of TV.
It is. 40 the first episode of Alias is another one. Actually, so much goes on in that. It feels like a Bond movie just on your TV, and it was very propulsive first episode. I absolutely loved that when that first aired. Homeland as well is another one which had a fantastic whole first season of Homeland is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think while it did become good again, it went through some very patchy seasons. I think it's because they were trying to work out what to do with Brody after that first, and couldn't work out what to do with him. I think once they lost Brody, it actually became a very different show and it became good again. But some of those latter Brody seasons were just like, what?
Getting bogged down in Brody's family.
Yeah. Down in Brody.
No.
First episode of The Walking Dead is another one. Incredibly good.
Incredibly good.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good one. I always go back to The Shield, actually, when it comes to pilots, because You know, he's the main character. He's the protagonist. He literally shoots another cop in the face at the end, towards the end of that first episode. And he just, nothing quite lays out who he is. Yeah. Like, he's a cop, you root for him, he's charismatic, he's corrupt as fuck. And he literally murders another cop because he thinks, quite rightly, that yeah. cop is going to rat him out. And so he shoots him in the face.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I do love the brutality, you know, the attention-grabbing acts in a pilot, but you're like, and that's obviously one of them.
Yeah, it really is. You know, one, of course, that I'm surprised you didn't mention, because Beth hasn't seen it, but the first one of Friday Night Lights is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But genuinely, a lot of people have been watching this recently since we've been talking about it, and just that, what happens to Jason Street, I won't spoil it, but that very first episode is incredible television. It really is. Like, it really grabs you.
What happens?
Well, Beth, I don't want to spoil it for you. So, you know, I went to see it.
It's good to laugh.
Yes, it is. It's a joke that never gets old. Any other surprise? You didn't mention Atlanta,
Beth? I was literally just about to, if you would have given me but a moment to breathe.
I just assumed it was a show you haven't seen. So.
I had a bit lined up for Atlanta. I love that one because it's light on exposition. You meet all of the characters, and I feel like you're, again, with like Tony Soprano, you're instantly engaged. Less so by Donald Glover's character, but Paperboy and Lakeith Stanfield as well, which is the first thing I'd seen him in. I feel like it was his first, aside from Short Term 12 he was in, I hadn't really seen him in anything. And he's instantly, like, the physicality of that man, the wild charisma he has is super interesting. And then that show is so tonally ambitious as well. That kind of Twin Peaks in, like, the nighttime in Atlanta is just so interesting against the world of this kind of aspiring rapper. Everyone's poor, everyone's angry. It's so interesting. So yes, Atlanta.
Yes, Atlanta.
Yes, Atlanta. The Good Place was great.
It does. Yeah, that's a very good,
really
first
good
episode.
Pilot. Like, just because it's so bold for a network comedy sitcom, you know. With Ted Danson, I was stunned by that.
Do you know what? I would say the most excited I've ever been by the pilot of an episode is 24. Like, because I'd never seen anything like that. At that particular point in time, at the kind of early sort of years of peak TV, but also just it being in real time and just the intensity of Kiefer Sutherland just going around just yelling at everyone and like shooting his boss with a tranquilizer. You're like, what is happening? Like, it was so insanely over the top and high octane and completely relentless. That's incredible.
I feel like I'm cheating by saying this because I didn't watch it until like 20 years after it came out. But
Battlestar Galactica.
I imagine, talking about Twin Peaks, the Twin Peaks pilot was probably... Yes. I feel like watching it so far after it was released probably takes the sting out of the significance of it at the time, but...
I'm very glad you mentioned that because I would have totally forgotten. The Twin Peaks, absolutely. That first episode is a fucking masterpiece.
It is incredible.
And that is a show that I need to watch that again. I did watch it a couple of years ago when it all came out on Blu-ray, I think, for the first time. But that first episode, is amazing.
It's
absolutely
brilliant.
Amazing. And kind of... fans of the show will, but there's a little bit of a tailing off. Certainly season two was not great. But that first episode, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
One more disappointing one, which I meant to mention, is Schitt's Creek. I say to a lot of people, because Schitt's Creek, you know, Schitt's Creek now gets discussed on This Morning, you know, on ITV, and it's becoming a cultural phenomenon. But I always still say to people when they're starting to watch it the first time, don't expect that much from the first few episodes, possibly even the first season. But in that first episode, they're just kind of irritating, all of them. It's like a gathering of irritating, spoilt people being irritating and spoilt at each other.
Yeah.
And I think it only finds its heart. The more you are with them, you understand why they are who they are. And I just think everything about it, the writing, the performances, sharpened up as it goes along. So
that's bratty, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As they're kind of brought down to earth. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think Schitt's Creek isn't a great pilot. Amazing that it went on to amazing and brilliant that it went on to its six seasons.
Yeah. I watched that first episode and was like, no, I'm done.
Yeah, a lot of people have that response.
Also, it's a comedy. So
of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And quite off comedy of excruciation as well. Mm-hmm.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
is
I love it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, not entirely, but that is an element of it.
Yeah, well,
probably less excruciation as it goes along and more sincerity, more romance. In fact, once the romance really kicks in, I think that's when it becomes like super special. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I think if we carry on, we're just going to be listing shows. Yeah. So, Gareth, I hope that has answered your question. If you have a question for us, do please send them to us either via Instagram or via Twitter at Pilot TV Pod.
Welcome back to Yeah, That's a Pepper Thing. First up, we've got Harrison wrapping his Dr. Pepper in a tiny quilt so it feels at home. Oh, how tender. That's a Pepper Thing! And over to Becca, who's whispering affirmations to her can.
You're sweet. You're unique. You're the best thing I ever poured over ice.
She swears it makes it taste better. It's not a science thing, but it's a Pepper Thing! Why do they all do it? All for that sweet, delicious, truly one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper. It's a Pepper Thing!
Shall we get on to the news? Have you heard? The Star Trek will not be...
I know. We've done that. Have you heard? Done. The Peacock arrived on Sky platform this week.
Oh, we've done so much news. So, yeah. But that gives us all the more time to talk about the trailer for The Expanse Season 6, which of course dropped this week and was everything we dreamed it would be and more. Isn't that right, Beth?
I've not seen it and I've not seen The Expanse, so...
So you have enough time. So you've got about 2, maybe 3 weeks, I would say, until the final season of The Expanse drops on Amazon and we end up reviewing it. So you can watch all 5 seasons between now and then if you really put your mind to
it,
I'm saying.
You could have a life. And,
there is no life outside The Expanse.
Enjoy yourself, have a good time. Yeah, depending, whichever. I thought we watched a great... Sorry, I've already moving on a little bit from The Expanse.
No, carry on.
Please, but let's,
no, there's nothing, carry on.
Did it live up to your expectations, James?
Oh, sorry. So much. Oh, boy, I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
It was magnificent. It actually made me sad more than anything because there's only 6 episodes and that just...
That's peak. That might swing me to watch it.
Unbelievable.
I thought when you said the trailer, I thought you were going to talk about the trailer that we all watched together in the preparation for this.
Oh,
very
bright.
Well,
okay.
Chris and James are flapping about with levels.
Yeah, Beth got the cranked up the internet and showed us Pam and Tommy trailer, which is arriving on Disney Plus next year here in the UK.
Yeah,
Hulu in America. And the trailer did look fantastic. I have to say, it's
great.
A very, very exciting, brilliantly put together and edited trailer showing you... We'd already seen pictures of Lily James as Pam Lanson. Incredible transformation.
Yeah.
Sebastian Stan as Tommy. It does look fantastic.
I think this might be Lily James's, just based on that trailer, this might be Lily James's show. Like, the big takeaway. I mean, there's plenty to talk about. Seth Rogen, Nick Offerman looking exquisite in a mullet and the thick moustache is back. I mean, there's everything. I mean, you were saying, and I'm so... Oh, God, I'm going to say his name. You were saying, I bet Ryan Murphy is angry that he didn't get his grips, his talons into this.
Because this could be
scandal.
American Crime Story colon Pam and Tommy, couldn't it?
But it's nice.
You want to be careful, actually, Beth, because if you say his name 3 times while looking in a mirror, a new series drops on Netflix. So,
a new series based on the true story of a scandal, a bit like this one. This is actually Rob Siegel has written this.
Yeah.
Directed by Craig Gillespie.
Lars and the Real Girl fame. Yes. Obviously, loads. Oh, and I, Tonya, obviously.
I, Tonya and Cruella. So I, Tonya, I guess, is the... You can tell. I, Tonya, in fact, now you think that the tone of the trailer is very I, Tonya-ish, isn't it?
And it's interesting you made the comparison to it because you were saying that she reminds you of Margot Robbie in this, and that is very much that same kind of strand of performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really excited for this.
And it's produced by Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen.
Perfect.
Yeah, it looks very exciting.
Yeah. We got some first images, which I'm going to take because we had nothing else on it, but for the 4th season of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Is that literally a meh or a...
Meh, fine, yeah.
Some lovely high production value stills, which is, I mean... Put it straight in my veins, to be honest, but still no release date. It usually comes out in December, and I imagine I'm going to go ahead and say that's not going to happen because that's in a week. So unless they're going to, drop it without really telling anyone, without a trailer, I don't think that's going to happen. So that's quite disappointing because that's usually my Christmas watch.
I haven't heard when that is arriving. Actually,
it will be arriving on Paramount Plus at some point in 2022.
I'm really
Prime
excited
video.
For this one because John Waters is in it, which I think is a great addition.
Great.
And Peter Petrelli himself, Milo Ventimiglia. Yes.
Mm.
Who was, of course, in Gilmore Girls.
Yes, he was.
So the worlds doth collide.
And in Heroes, which is another great pilot episode.
Yeah. Do you know what? Yeah. I will agree with that one.
Mm.
When Claire videos herself falling off the oil rig. And then she comes through and she's like, that was take 26. And you're like, what am I watching?
Yeah. Save the cheerleader. Save the world.
Save the world.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also for bad pilots, every single Star Trek before Discovery.
Okay.
Oh, Picard's quite good. I actually listened to what you're saying.
Everything before Discovery, every single Star Trek has had a terrible pilot.
Yeah.
Every single
maybe
one.
Original.
Also terrible.
No, I think original's pretty good.
No. Okay. They're all awful. Anyway, that question is done with.
Yes.
We've moved on. Yeah. We're into news.
I guess that we're not going to do Disney Plus Day, even though it was primarily television.
I mean, we have talked about Disney Plus Day on Empire, but we should, of course, cover it here. Disney Plus Day, of course, the day where we thought we would hear an awful lot about shows and stuff, and, you know, we didn't. It was a bit anticlimactic, because a lot of stuff I felt like we already knew, and there wasn't a lot of footage of things. Like, we saw a little bit of Moon Knight footage, which was mainly notable for Oscar Isaac's sort of like London cabbie accent.
Hello.
Which was very weird. You know, we saw some concept art from Obi-Wan Kenobi, which frankly looked like concept art from, you know,
Star Wars.
Basically, yeah. So I was like, okay, sure, whatever. Yeah. You know, the House of Harkness, the Agatha Harkness show, you know, Marvel Zombies. What else got announced, Beth?
Oh God, there was the X-Men 97, which resulted in the whole group singing the X-Men theme song.
Isn't that, and I use the word advisedly, animated?
It is animated. So Beth had a lot to say about it.
But it was, what was it? So it was the Oscar Isaac one. She says as a
Moon Knight
periphery Marvel speculator, Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk.
She-Hulk was on there. Yeah, Ironheart, Echo, both got logos, if you're into logos.
Yeah. I'm excited for Agatha. Helen O'Hara has said that I will enjoy Ms. Marvel, and her word is gospel, so I will choose to be excited about that one.
Yeah, Willow, there was all the Willow stuff.
Willow stuff's exciting. Yeah, and you know, after Boy's Favourite Show, Scenes from a Marriage, I'm sure we're all excited about the Oscar Isaac Marvel outing.
Oh yeah, hey, if he's wearing sweat, like the cardigans, I'm there.
I think I'm more there for him doing an accent, a weird accent, than him being a bit dull on Scenes from a Marriage.
He is. You are talking about Duke Leto Atreides. Have some respect.
Oh yeah, sorry, I forgot. Yeah, I mean that's. Oh yeah, I mean, you know, he's a god usually.
Yes, he is.
Scenes from.
But yeah, so like Disney Plus Day, there was some stuff, but it was all just felt there a little bit. But genuinely, that's how I felt. If someone says to me, "What's Disney Plus Day?" I said, "Oh, there was some stuff."
Yeah.
Because it was all stuff we kind of knew existed, and we saw some logos or sort of like little minor things or some other stuff that was announced. That, oh, that's sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It was more putting stuff out actually to consumers, wasn't it, really, on the day? Like, that was the day that Home Sweet Home Alone arrived, I think, wasn't it? Is that right? And other things.
And other things.
Other Marvel films debuted on the platform, I think.
I suppose I was expecting big things from this day, and I felt quite let down by it in the end. But having said that,
never let James Dyer down. He will have him for you on this very podcast.
That's it. What I wasn't disappointed by was the fact that the Halo TV series teaser leaked on Facebook ahead of time.
Oh, shit.
I think they accidentally put it out as a Facebook ad, and it showed Pablo Schreiber putting on the Master Chief helmet. Beth, you'd been very excited. It's just so good.
But someone calls is making that. Who's the creative team behind that?
Yes, Beth, funny you should mention that. It's Ryan Murphy. No, it's not. It's actually not Ryan Murphy at all.
Ryan Murphy's Halo.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. That would be, I would watch that.
Great, yeah.
I would 100% watch that,
14 hours.
I do know that the episodes are going to be directed by a number of people, including Otto Bathurst of Peaky Blinders fame, the guy who shaped Peaky Blinders into what it is today. So that's pretty cool. Has there been any news that isn't Halo /Disney related? Or Star Trek related, or streaming related.
Did you know that the next, the Courtney Cox is doing this show called Shining Veil, which is written by Sharon Horgan?
I did know that. Yes.
I didn't quite know about that until I read
it. In March, I think it is.
Yeah, so it's coming to. Yeah, well, the reason you knew about it because you sent the press release.
I got the same press release you did.
But I didn't know before that is what I meant. It's a Stars Play. It's going to be Stars Play March. But I like the idea of Courtney Cox in the thing written by Sharon Horgan.
Oh, definitely.
Co-created with Jeff Anstruff of Ground Floor fame. It's called Shining Veil. It's described as a haunted family comedy.
Okay.
So Greg Kinnear is in it as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I think it sounds spiffing.
Spiffing.
Yeah.
It sounds absolutely spiffing, says Boyd.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. That's a bit of news not related to those other things.
Are we done with news?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. I've got bored of news. Half this podcast has been news. We began with news.
You were bored by news about an hour ago.
That's true. That's true. Let's move then on to reviews. And first up this week, a week after it aired, in fact, but that's embargoes for you, we have Amazon's lavish adaptation of Robert Jordan's fantasy series, The Wheel of Time, taking place in a world in which men who use magic go mad and powerful sorceresses called Aes Sedai shape global events. This, of course, does see a bunch of people on a quest to save the world despite being pursued by Trollocs, Fades, and minions of the Dark One. But never mind the Trollocs, it's the Wheel of Time. Isn't that right, Beth?
Yes. That was very good. Well done.
well done.
Well done, you. Well done, you.
I only watched one episode, I have to put my hands up and say, but really didn't mind this. And I did go in with the
That is the kind of endorsement I was looking for. Really only watched one episode, didn't want to watch the rest, but I really didn't mind
this. I really did not mind. In fact, potentially, I mean, I saw you gave it 3 stars on the Empire review, and I would go higher than that a little bit. I quite enjoyed the first.
You would give it 4 stars.
I think I would.
That's interesting because I think the first episode is dreadful. genuinely, so I watched 6 episodes of this,
right.
But I thought the first episode was, I don't think it's as much their fault
right.
as anything else, because it's the way the story begins. It starts with a slightly sort of tropey setup, which I think is a little bit tired. It's not until the plot starts to get quite, tangled and twisted, which it does. And I thought every episode got better of the first 6. I thought each one was consistently better. The third one particularly good, and then 4th and 5th. But I thought it built momentum as it went. Again, as the plot gets more involved, I just found at the beginning I was just like, what is going on? And I just don't think they help themselves,
right?
Because there's a big battle in the first episode with a lot of sort of Trollocs, and they do look a bit Trollocs, and but genuinely, I do love saying Trollocs, but genuinely, I thought that is going to put off a lot of people. And I thought, now bearing in mind this show, which is the show that Jeff Bezos apparently stood up and said, I want Amazon's Game of Thrones, make Amazon's Game of Thrones, and they turned to this.
Yeah.
So that's what this is. It is rumored to have cost $10 million an episode. Now, to put this in perspective, the first season of Game of Thrones cost $6 million an episode. So you would expect this to look absolutely lavish. And you remember when the trailer first dropped, and my concern was, it looks a bit cheap. And I was watching the first episode, and I was like, where did they spend this $10 million? Is the catering just off the fucking chain?
What I love about this whole thing is, this is supposed to be Beth's fucking review of the show.
Jesus, literally,
you have literally...
What do I think about Wheel of Time?
I mean, and pivoted. At one point,
not even a chance that
exactly.
I'm giving you.
Exactly.
Draw breath. Yeah. Can you fucking jump?
When is he? I was literally sitting here going, when is he going to? Is this Beth? Did I miss something? Is Beth's review of this show been? Has it started yet?
I apologise.
Keep Beth, it in.
You're not sorry at all.
Yeah, don't edit this. Don't edit
I'm
the James edit explaining
it.
Of this.
I'm going to leave this in. My Wheel of Time jacking of your review. Sorry. Let's go back. Beth, tell us about the Wheel of Time.
I'm fed up of this. James jacked. I've been James jacked. Oh. So yeah, I actually. So the exposition was cloggy and silly. I actually didn't think the Trollocs were so bad. I thought they were genuinely quite scary. I think what I chose to do was see it through slightly different lenses. So I didn't know about the 10 million per episode, even though you've told me. I've probably just
you
mentally
don't listen to anything I say. Yeah, that's fine.
To you.
Yeah.
So I wasn't thinking about it as that. I was trying, because we've kind of, let's be honest, shit on a lot of sci-fi that's come on recently and moaned about how much sci-fi we've got. So I tried to pause that rage for a little while, sit down and watch Wheel of Time, didn't think about the 10 mil per episode, and just decided to see it as like a scary world fantasy kind of epic. And I chose to see Rosamund Pike through quite a camp lens, which worked really well for me. So that's how I chose to see it. And because of that, I had fun with it. Like, I think the Trollocs, yeah, they probably could look better, but the character design was really interesting. They were pretty fucking scary, to be honest. And I thought so there's a scene in which they invade the village where the central characters have lived, I assume, their whole lives, and they basically tear it to shreds. And I thought that was genuinely quite scary. And And I was quite anxious watching it. I think it was well staged. I liked some of the characters. It's inevitable, isn't it? It's inevitable of a show. Well, it was inevitable Game of Thrones in the first season. There would have been people in that where I'm like, well, you're a bit fucking drip, to be honest. And the same here. There's a lad in it. I feel bad for saying this, but I've called him Pouty McPouterson in this. And he looks like a Burberry model. He probably is a Burberry model. And I think he's kind of tasked, or he's going to be tasked with a pretty big mission moving forward, but for now he's just a little bit pouty and wears like a nice jumper, has a nice relationship with his dad, but for this he seems like a bit of a weak link. But I did really like the guy who I refuse to believe is not Aaron Taylor Johnson, to the point I did not know Aaron Taylor Johnson was
bizarre.
In this,
yeah.
And it's only when he sort of turns slightly against the light, I quite liked him. So he's Barney Harris, I think it's Aaron Taylor Johnson, but I really liked him. He had what I call the case of the Bettanys, in that he has this kind of swagger to him that Paul Bettany had in A Knight's Tale, a fantastic character.
Used to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's already been recast.
Recast for season two.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And what the fuck's going on with that?
Yeah. Nobody knows. Yeah. Nobody
Donald
knows.
Finn is taking over season two.
Who
Carry
is?
On. Donald Finn, some dude.
Oh, do I like him? Oh, do you know what? That's not the type of giggling that. that's a shame.
Maybe he looked too much like...
That's it. They were just getting, everyone kept saying, why is Aaron Taylor Johnson here?
Yeah, it could be. I mean,
that's it. Yeah.
But I thought he was really great in it. Marcus Rutherford as this guy, Perrin, in it, who gets some pretty fucking sad shit happens to him in the first episode. And I like their camaraderie. There's kind of this trio of lads in this. It's probably bad of me to say in a science fiction that favours women that I go for the male characters. But sometimes that's what happens. I like the male characters best in Girls, for example. So I was really here for those characters. And I think Rosamund Pike, to be honest, it's just having some fucking fun with this.
Like, she's great.
Yeah.
She's great.
Mm. I would not advise you to take this seriously. And I'm sorry to the people that do take this really seriously and love the source material.
Uh-huh.
But I chose to see her character, Moiraine. I mean, even that's a camp name, really. It sounds like a talk show host. Helen's going to beat me up. I chose to see her as this kind of camp, like domineering woman who can do cool things with lightning whips. And I had a great time with it. So do you know what? Yeah. Pause the rage. Just sat and enjoyed this as a sort of fantasy high action romp. Had a nice time.
Boyd.
Yeah. I think, I didn't rage, but do you know what? The problem, I think, for me was I watched this after another show, which we're going to review later.
Right.
And let's just say, it does not. I think the comparison is really unfortunate, because for me, I didn't hate it either. But it was funny enough, the very first thing you said, which was, it was fine, whatever it was, whatever
it
kind
was
of, you know,
absolutely fine.
The vague, the vague kind of positivity, but actually,
yeah.
So I don't think it's you hated the pilot. I don't think it's terrible, but I mean, certainly, there's nothing in it that is going to entice me to watch any more of it, which is a disaster, really. I mean, I think it potentially a disaster for Prime Video, in the sense that it's definitely not good enough for it to feel in any way like the new Game of Thrones, whatever.
They did put out the first three, though. So they've dropped the first three, which I think was a very shrewd move, because again, the third episode is significantly better than the second, which is significantly better than the first. Oh, yeah. So,
I mean, I will carry on watching it as a professional, you know, I feel like...
Good for you, boy.
I meant to carry on watching the next two anyway, and then I ended up not having time because I fucked it up. But... So I feel bad for judging it, but I do think the opening episode is massively disappointing. It just it starts off with a voiceover from
Rosamund Pike,
which is just,
yeah, I didn't like that.
Like, you don't want that, you know. The whole show don't tell thing. It's like they kept telling it, you know, they didn't work out a way of showing it. I think after June, June deals with world building and scene setting and character development, and just by thrusting you into the middle of it, right? And it doesn't, it brilliantly avoids exposition.
Well, and also, because every time you want to know something, Timothy Chalamet looks it up on virtual Wikipedia and you hear the entry read out.
So. Right, that's true. That is true. And I guess similarly, what's the other thing that did that similarly? The Marvel series did the whole thing, didn't they? Where they explained everything with a kind of cartoony, but the voiceover felt very clunky and basic and irritating. It irritated me. I thought the Trollocs were terrible, I have to say. I thought they were the least scary thing I've ever seen in my life. And again, it's partly because of the unfortunate comparison with another show with heavy fantasy invading creature element to it that we'll come to, that James hasn't even watched yet, so he won't know. And then like, there were bits like, there's a lot of the first episode, it takes place in this inn, this like, you know, in this village.
Yeah.
And you know what really put me off? I suddenly noticed that everyone in this inn, it was laughing. All the, you know, it was like, we're going to create this bawdy, like totally cliched. You know, world of this inn where everyone's drinking and having fun. And literally this scene opens with just like cutting from one giggling, laughing, lunatic doofus character to another. I was like, this is really bad. This is really cheesy. At some point, someone's like, that's enough laughing, people. And you know, they're just laughing for no real reason. There's no dialogue. They're just going, ha, 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 ha. Once you notice it, it's really off-putting.
That's amazing. It's
terrible. And so I didn't like the beasts, the Trollocs. The whole idea that she... I found the whole idea that Rosamund Pike's Aes Sedai.
Moraine Damodred of the Blue Archer.
Right. She knew enough. She had her vague powers, which are all vague and like not cool. She can do certain things. She could ascertain that one of this gang of dudes, or that she arrived at the village for, was the new incarnation of this legendary figure in the history of the world, whatever, as she explained in the voiceover. But not which one. I was like, well, that's handy, isn't it? She knows it's one of them, because there can be a mystery element of her working out which one it is. But why?
It's not so much power. She's following a prophecy, and they all fit, broadly speaking. They're all the right age, except for Nynaeve, who's slightly older, but she clearly has power, so there's something going on there. Okay. So she's like, it's going to be one of you, but I can't tell which one. So she takes them all with her.
Because if I could tell which one, then there won't be another 14 books.
This is an addition, so that's not a book thing. So to make the women as well sort of like potential reincarnations of the dragon is a new addition to this.
Okay.
As are the characters, because the characters are much younger in the books and they've aged them up.
Right.
And I think one of the things they've clearly done here is they don't want the hint of YA about this.
Yeah.
So they've not only aged them up, like they've got people shagging in the first 15 minutes. Yeah. You know, there's violence in it.
Well, the dude, Rosamund Pike's gets in the bath with her.
Her naked. Warder, Landmandragoran.
So there's a good gratuitous butt shot and all things like that. And there's the odd gratuitous kind of shagging thing going on. Yes, you're right.
But it's quite chaste shagging. Like, it's not booby at all.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Compared to Game of Thrones, again, I know it's unfair. But
no, but that's a good... I think it's a good thing. I think... So it's adult theme, but it's not exploitative. It's not gratuitous. Yeah. It didn't need to have naked women everywhere.
Right. All I'd say is there's a line between the gratuitousness, exploitativeness of early days Game of Thrones, which was... they did use... The boobage in that is beautiful. But there were, you know, there was also male nudity, you know, fairly early on in that show. But in general, it felt much bolder and more, you know, edgy.
It did feel...
This doesn't feel edgy in any way.
But neither are the books, to be fair.
Right,
the books are very chaste. In that way, the high fantasy often is.
If you're going to DYA it...
Sure. Well, the books aren't YA. It's important to note that.
All right. But it still felt like... It felt YA-ish anyway, in the end. It didn't feel particularly adult, even despite, you know, the cheeky, bawdy moments of the naked bathing and all that. So I just didn't feel like... I just didn't think there was any dialogue that was particularly memorable or
funny
or interesting.
Genuinely awful.
The characters were bland. So, but I will persevere because I feel like a duty to persevere, because Helen O'Hara, before we start recording, said it gets much better. And,
it does. No, but it does. You know, I have said this, but I know you don't.
I know, but I'll take her opinion over you.
But it is very much the case that it does improve as it goes. Like, again, it's because it's much more complex than it first seems. Yeah. And you need all those different threads and the different factions to emerge, and it does get very, very gripping as it goes along. And I have no doubt it will be a really good series. My worry is that if people watch the first episode, they'll be like, absolutely not, and they'll switch off. Because, and I won't go through this particular rant again because I've done it far too many times on this podcast, but it doesn't have the crossover appeal that Game of Thrones does. And I know people think, oh, why do you keep comparing it to Game of Thrones? Well, ultimately, the only reason it exists is because Jeff Bezos saw Game of Thrones. So I think it's fair comment. But it doesn't have the crossover appeal because it leans too heavily into the fantasy aspects. I mean, the first episode, Beth somehow managed to get through it, but it's magic and Trollocs and chosen ones and prophecies and looming portentous conversations about the Dark One's return. Yeah. Whereas, you know, the Game of Thrones begins with a kid being pushed out of a window by a brother and sister who've been fucking in a tower. Like, that's something we can all, you know, naturally empathise with.
But I actually don't even agree that... I don't think it's the too much magic fantasy thing that's the problem with it. I mean, Harry Potter, you know...
Yeah, but Harry Potter has a playfulness.
Right,
this is so earnest.
That's why I'm saying it's the tone. it's not the fact that it's complicated and there's magic and there's trollocs and spells and all that that is the problem. It's the tone, right, which is banal and not. It's neither edgy nor IA. It's kind of like, it hasn't got an instantly, it doesn't grab you at all.
And it's interesting you say that, because some people have accused Dune of being like that as well, the film Dune, because it's very earnest and almost entirely humorless. But actually, I think reverence for world-building mythology works, again, if you strike the right tone. And I think Dune gives you that sense of magnificence and epic scope. And what this does, it's not funny, it's not humorous, it's not tongue-in-cheek, it's not playful, but it also doesn't feel epic. It feels quite small, certainly early on, until it broadens out.
It's just trying to be everything. It's neither one thing nor another. It's not nailing down what its tone is. That is the problem. It hasn't got a tone. Well, it's not sexy. It's kind of a bit like, June's not going to suddenly have a scene where that woman's in the bath and the bloke takes his clothes and walks in, because that would be a bit
Oscar
weird.
Isaac in it, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it wasn't a sexy scene though, was it?
Right,
it was quite painful. I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but do you know what I mean? I feel like if you couldn't decide, it had a bit sexy, a bit edgy, but not really, a bit horror-y with the creatures, with the, you know, it was just trying to be all things to all people, and failed, and it needs to find its tone.
I think once it stops trying to establish its Game of Thrones credentials, once it stops trying to, I think there's a confidence that builds as it goes, and when it starts to feel like its own thing, and I think that's when I started to really enjoy it. And also because, as I say, there's like 15 books, including the prequel, there's a lot going on in this story. Like, once you start to realise how deep and rich the sort of fabric of this mythology is, I think actually it does.
I can't even begin to imagine what the fuck it goes on about in the next one of these books. Like, what? It seems a weirdly thin thing at the moment to me. Like, so you're saying, is this search for this person, does that go on for like 14 books? Is that the kind of basis of that whole thing?
Well, you see hints of this. So bear in mind, this show begins with a man running away from a bunch of women. And the whole point is that they grab him because he is a man who can touch the One Power and therefore is going mad. And so these women sort of like seize him, essentially. Yeah. And that's kind of the thrust of this. Like, the gender politics of this is quite interesting. But also, like, I quite like the fact about this, that there are a lot of female characters in this, and they're not exploited in any way. They are generally central to the plot. I think the best character in this by a country mile is Zoe Robbins Nynaeve. She's brilliant. I remember she annoyed me a little bit in the books because she's unnecessarily ornery. And she is also in the series as well, but I think Zoe Robbins makes her quite likable as well, which is a very fine line to walk. And she has this kind of like a flirty fighty thing going on with Lan, played by Daniel Henney. But yeah, some really fun stuff. The main character, which is Josha Stradovsky, his character certainly early on feels a little bit bland.
Yes.
I
can't even remember which one he is.
Well, quite, exactly. He's Rand, but he has a lot of heavy lifting ahead of him, so I'm hoping that he grows into that role and really inhabits it, because there's a lot going on in that role. But look, I'm 100% going to keep watching this, and when I got to the end of these six, I was desperate for the last two, and obviously I now have to wait, but so it is worth persevering with. I would say if you're on the fence about this at all, watch the first three. Drop on day one, or have dropped, you can watch them now. Watch those first three episodes. If you're not bitten by this by the end of the third one, you're not going to be, I wouldn't think, because the third one's really good.
Do you know what I've done with this? I've just realised I think I've adopted like a coping mechanism for watching these shows, because I knew this was coming. So I was like, come on, Beth, how are you going to enjoy this? And what I've done is like just put myself in the necessary frame of mind to enjoy this as much as possible, because I know otherwise I'm going to be fucking miserable sat enduring this. So I've just been like, let's just have fun with it, Beth. And just like been like, oh, the monsters are bad, let's look at her a bit camp, shall we? And I've really just like put myself in the right frame of mind to enjoy this as much as I can.
I applaud this new method that you've taken.
I enjoyed it a lot more, so that's great.
Well, The Wheel of Time is available now. The first three episodes are available now as we go out on, in fact, there's probably the fourth one might be available by the time we go out. I lose track of when this aired, when we record, and by the time we go out. So I'm going to just go out on a limb and say I reckon there's probably four available by the time you hear this, but they are on Prime Video.
No, I don't think that's true. I think three.
You think three?
Yeah, because it's week one. Yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because we come out on Monday and the first episodes aren't there. Are there?
No, I think, but it was out last week, so.
Maybe you're right.
So it's out, okay. So it's out this week. So this has got Abbott and Costello. It's out this week as we record, but when we go out, it will have been last week.
Oh, okay.
So actually.
Right. Now you just confused yourself.
I have no idea. Okay, some episodes of this show are available. It could be 3, it could be 4. Frankly, I don't even know what day it is. But it is on Prime Video, and, you know, enjoy. Anyway, next up, we have Hellbound. And this is a Korean language supernatural thriller in which people begin to receive portents of doom, only for unearthly smoke monsters to appear at the appointed hour and drag them straight to hell. At which point, all manner of religious doomsday cults spring up and call it divine judgment. And if that sounds vague, it's because I haven't seen it. Because Boyd, when he requested screeners, didn't ask for me to have
it's
any.
All my
and
fault.
Yes, it is your fault. And so at 10 o'clock last night, I was like, I can't see this in my queue. So I haven't seen it. Tell me, what guys, was it good?
Boyd. Yes, well, funny enough, Beth somehow managed to get in her Netflix queue
because she's got self.
Yes, exactly.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm just so entitled. I just assume someone will put it there for me.
Some minion like me haven't magically got it in your fucking Netflix queue. Anyway, let's not get bogged down in that whole situation. Well, this was the show I watched before Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
And I have to say, this is as powerfully vibrant, funny, weird, horrific, scary, beautifully made, dazzlingly well directed, brilliantly acted, and fascinating and intriguing and enticing to watch you more as The Wheel of Time was none of those things. And I sat there thinking, poor Jeff Bezos is like, you know, he wants a thing.
No, we do not say poor Jeff Bezos.
We really don't.
A very good point.
A very good point.
That's Jeff Bezos. I would go, oh my God, there's a show that Netflix have got. It's a Korean show. It's from the guy who directed The Train to Busan. It's just fucking much better than this thing that we've just spent 10 million per episode on. And that's my feeling about it. And I know that's unfair. Probably, and you know, I'm sorry, I apologize to all Wheel of Time fans in advance, but it's just a brilliant. I'm talking of great pilot. I mean, what a fucking dazzling opening episode.
The opening sequence alone. Yeah. Bloody
so you've got
hell.
This opening sequence. So the whole idea of it is that there are these beings that somehow come down to Korea and warn individuals, seemingly random individuals, that they're going to die at some point in the next couple of days or whatever. And they give them the time, day, and place where they're going to come to an end. And it's them, these horrible, scary things.
Smoke monster things.
That basically, and in the first scene, it's spectacularly violent and gory. Yeah. And the way they kill the first person, the first victim that we see in the show is quite astonishing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, if you are squeamish and if you can't take full on proper, you know, evisceration of people, then don't watch this. Then it unfolds that it's kind of part detective drama. You're introduced to characters who are detectives and they're kind of investigating this thing. And what I thought was really funny about it, and I think it's deliberate, is everyone, you're aware from the start that this is a mystical kind of supernatural thing, beings that have done this thing. But there's still people who try and doubt that it is by thinking that it's anyone who filmed it put CGI in. So it kind of touches upon, you know, that people put stuff on YouTube.
Conspiracy stuff.
And the conspiracy theorists still don't believe stuff, even if it's happening in front of their very eyes. Yeah. There's that. There's an criminal investigation into these beings, which I think is the whole idea of that is really funny.
Yeah.
And I thought the police characters were great and interesting. One of them's got a recovering from trauma and loss, which is obviously a trope and a cliche of these things, but still added another level of interest to it. And then you've got the arrival of this cult leader halfway through the first episode, who is brilliantly kind of like softly spoken young guy, who is this Jesus Christ figure who all people like worship so much. Like when he gets the train back home and old women are giving up their seat on the tube for him. And I love the fact he insists on telling his story. So the police are investigating him, thinking that he's got some connection to these smoke monster beast things. And he goes, can you just accompany, I'm just going to go home now. You can walk with me. And the first episode show follows him getting the train, walking back home. And they have this long conversation where they try and work out what the fuck is going on with him and who he is and is he evil, is he good, etc. I just thought it was so inventive and brilliantly done. It's another potential massive South Korean hit after what's it called?
Squid Game.
Squid Game. Thank you. another massive South Korean hit after Squid Game.
Yeah.
And it shows they really are at the cutting edge, you know, of TV if they're making this stuff, because it's so, I thought it was absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, Train to Busan, I think that was one of my favourite films of that year.
Yeah, same.
The sheer surprise, and it's on me for not being as schooled in South Korean cinema as I should be, but the sheer gleeful surprise of watching that film for the first time. And it carries a lot of that energy into this show. I mean, the first 10 minutes are like furiously propulsive, where it's this guy and he gets the time is up basically on his phone, and then these three creatures come down from God knows where and pursue him in broad daylight down a busy street, and it's furious. I think the only thing I didn't like about this, and I loved I've called him religious rock star Robert Langdon.
Yeah, yes.
Because he does have this kind of rock star aura about him, but very softly spoken, but has all these, he's like a religious scholar, basically, who has this take on things. The only take on this whole thing that I didn't like was the these insufferable like Gen Z streamers. So there's another thing coming in where it's again kind of conspiracy theorists and evangelicals kind of taking to South Korean streaming services, and you can see them live streaming and sounding off about it. And it's contemporary. I get why they're including it in it, but I'm far more interested in this premise, which is, and it's something like if they've sinned, I think is part of the motivation. If you've sinned, you get this kind of smoke monster thing appear. It reminded me of, weirdly, the Return to Oz film, if you ever watched that, the sequel to Wizard of Oz. So really ghoulish, horrible stuff. And it kind of manifests and it says when you're going to die, and then it goes away again. And that premise is fucking fascinating. Yeah. Because like, how would the world respond to that? It's very public. There's no getting around it. This is happening to people. It's an ongoing thing. That's fascinating to me. And the way it's ending is, with the first episode, is they want to live stream what happens, or live broadcast what happens to this woman who has seen she's like a mum of two little kids. And it's, they want to broadcast it happening to her. And that's how that ends the first episode. And I think that is a focal point. It's fascinating. It's just some of the political stuff with the kids, with the youth, is a little bit too distracting for me. Everything else, very on board with. The action sequences are extraordinary. Absolutely fucking extraordinary.
Yeah, that streaming guy at the end is annoying. Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's annoying.
Yeah, he's kind of a dreadful thing. But it's just...
It goes on a bit.
Another... cook in the kitchen that I don't think we need. But yeah, otherwise brilliant. And I just love how quiet James has been for this.
Well, I watched the trailer, if that helps. And the trailer made it look brutally unpleasant.
Yeah.
Like people being tortured, all sorts of stuff. I was just like, this looks nasty.
I mean, it is.
This is why you didn't want to watch it, then you didn't want to drop a simple email to the good
at 10 o'clock at night. I respected the publicist downtime, is what I was saying.
Because she would have been like, oh my God, it's James Dyer's emailed me. I must act now.
Exactly. I must immediately put this into a streaming queue. Much, yes.
Yeah. It is a bit leftoversy as well.
I
mean, a little bit so.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. It's all the good things.
Yeah.
But also Train to Busan is fucking great. And I'm glad to see he's doing something great with that platform that he's been given.
Yeah.
Hellbound is streaming now on Netflix. Is it the next Squid Game? Tell me.
Well, I don't think you should be... I think it's inevitably going to get chucked in with it because it's both South Korean, but in fact, it's different shows.
As I have done, yeah. I kept it in.
Netflix will probably mine that to market this, but it is a vastly different show.
Yeah, it is a vastly different show, of course. But I don't think it's quite got the enticing... premise that Squid Game has. Yeah. I think everything about Squid Game's premise, from its title and its setup, is people are like, oh, that sounds amazing. I think this is different, a prospect. Yeah. So I don't think it will be that kind of a pop culture phenomenon, but it is great though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, finally this week, we have American Rust that sees Jeff Daniels as a small town police chief tasked with solving a murder, juggling his own messy personal life and navigating small town politics, presumably while chugging Cheese Whiz. Beth, tell us about Jeff of Rust Town.
Right. So no coping mechanism whatsoever could have made me happy watching this show. So yeah, so the East Town comparisons are inevitable. He's this cranky curmudgeonous cop who, as you said, has to navigate through small town politics, which range from a group of men with firearms showing up to intimidate people at a property auction. There's some shady goings on between the kids and the youth of the town. There's some rivalry going on there, and some quite violent fights erupt as a result of it. Jeff Daniels is having a relationship with a local woman called Grace Poe, played by Maura Tierney. And she's in turn got something going on with a yokel, I think is a good way to describe him, if that's not an offensive thing to say. I'm always playing a face, so we won't say that.
You said it now.
But yeah, it's small town politics. Everyone's got a past and sad things have happened in said past. Everyone's harried, everyone's got a lot of secrets, but they all love each other, but it's a tough love that they've all had to earn. It sort of fumbles with charm. It ain't there of Easttown. And I do like with this, who is the creator of this? The creator is... Dan Futterman, an actor primarily. And you can sort of sense that in the direction of this. It's very performance-led and the performances are very good. And I like that the town feels very lived in by the time we get there, much as it does with Mare of Easttown. But there is just not an ounce of charm in the show. There's plenty of place for emotion. There are emotional connections between people. There's a kind of unsaid romance between two of the local boys in the show, which amounts to like this set piece, which involves a frozen lake, which is quite interesting to watch. But I just found this so bleak. And without the small town charm, I don't want it to be saccharine. I don't want it to be sweet and sentimental, but you want people you can really root for, like in Mare of Easttown. You want, cranky, but with a twinkle in their eye, and there is no twinkle in Jeff Daniels' eye.
I had visions. As I was watching this, I was thinking, the creators of this show, I have images of Dan Futterman sitting at home, and Mare of Easttown comes on, and he's like, oh, yeah. Him
and Jeff Bezos.
Him and Jeff Bezos, yeah. I mean, I don't feel sorry. I do feel sorry for Dan Futterman. I don't feel sorry for Jeff Bezos, just to make that clear. But I do have sympathy with Dan Futterman because everything that he's trying to do in this show, which is, let's face it, this is a crime drama, mystery.
Yeah.
There is a mystery. There is flashback 1 year later, 1 year earlier, blah, 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 the first episode. There's a whole array of characters who could have done the thing, and there's a detective who thinks he might be able to work it out, and there's bleak people on drugs, and there's people on opioids, and it's washed out kind of, bleak rural Rust Belt setting, small town, and it's all been dealt with in Mare of Easttown in an infinitesimally better, in every conceivable way.
Lovely word.
And that's why I just feel sorry for it, because it's perfectly, I would normally love this stuff. I think, as I said, when we reviewed Mare of Easttown, everything about that show had what I'm looking for in it. I love all of that gritty, set small town America setting, and the darkness that's beneath these lives and all of that, and the working class community, all the issues. And this has sexuality, and it has abuse, and it has drug, and as I've said, but it's just heavy.
Yeah.
It's kind of self-important. There's no humor in it whatsoever. So in fact, as you alluded to in your intro, James, of watching Mare in Mare of Easttown munching on her hot dog in the car and all of that, and that humanity and wit of that character.
Yeah.
And of, quite a lot of situations, Mare of Easttown, what it did was brilliantly not flinch from the harshness of all of the things that were going on with those characters, but it had humor all the way through. Not jokes. It had a, that's what real life is like. No matter how bleak the world, if a show hasn't got any kind of humor, and you talked about the seriousness of Dune, but I would counter that. Even in a way, there's a kind of underlying lightness when it needed to be. Even in Dune, in this, there is nothing.
Mm.
It's so ponderously heavy and self-important.
Yeah.
And we are dealing with drugs now, and we are dealing with, this now, and blah, 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 blah. It's not an enjoyable or illuminating or entertaining watch. And it's just trying to be, and I think it's very self-consciously trying to be serious. And this cast, I love all these people. I mean, Bill Camp legend from The Night Of. I mean, so fantastic as a detective in The Night Of. And even the young characters are great. You know, yeah. I think the young characters at least are more interesting than the ones in the first episode of The Wheel of Time. But Maura Tierney, brilliant.
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels, of course, you know, we love him from that. News from Newsroom, etc. But it's just lacking. It's just ponderous is the word. I can't think of any other word to describe it. And I know, and again, we had unfair comparisons is like the theme for me of this show, but it just was there in my mind. Mare of Easttown
is like,
it's just the object lesson in how to do what this is trying to do.
So this is based on Philip Meyer's book, isn't it? I haven't read it either. Like, the crux of this, of course, is that he's a very compromised police chief, and Maura Tierney is obviously his love interest in this. Her son gets into trouble, and then his loyalty is divided between her and his job, and it's what will he do to protect the son from what he may or may not have done. And I love Jeff Daniels, obviously Newsroom, big fan here. I think he's fantastic, and I really enjoyed him in this, but the problem I had, principally, is that this begins with, and this is absolutely true, a 2-minute dialogue-free sequence in which he painstakingly grinds up pills, weighs them, and, you know, for his medication. And it manages to then get more boring after that. So that's like it is so achingly slow. It is so painfully sort of dour and dreary and other D words. Like, it's just, and I struggled some. I wanted to like it. And by the end of it, I was just exhausted by the whole thing because and much as I love Jeff Daniels, like, his character is no mayor, you know, like, there's no fun to him at all.
He could have been. This is the other thing. He's got all the tools in the workshop. It's just he's been told to keep the workshop firmly locked.
Yeah. The material is not exactly, you know, peppy.
No.
It's got the story. Also, do you remember Your Honour, the Brian Cranston? Yeah. That was flawed. But
that
at
was
least
very dour as well.
Oh my God, it's a fucking laugh riot compared to this.
but also, like, a lot happens in Your Honour. Like, it's quite propulsive. Things like this, like, just nothing is happening. Yeah. Like,
you know, there are 9 episodes of this.
I mean, honestly, the thought of sitting through 9 hours.
Yeah, it's like, it shouldn't be that way. There are ways. There are ways of making this show so much better. I was just like, all the decision making is wrong.
Yeah,
because, you know, I mentioned Your Honour because that actually was very, the way it was directed and shot was really kind of thrilling, even when it was being, you know, even when it was kind of, it was being a bit dour as well.
Yeah. The car accident was really well done.
Yeah, it was beautifully done. Nothing in this is surprising the way it's done, is it? Like, nothing. The bit where he falls through the ice, spoiler, I haven't said who, so someone falls through some ice. Yeah. That was like momentarily, but even then you're like, even that could have been done so much more imaginatively.
That's quite anticlimactic.
Yeah.
It is funny, isn't it? The way that particular sequence is shot, it's really quite, I hate to say, it's quite boring. Like, someone falls through the ice and tries to get back up, and someone tries to rescue them. But even that, it's just like, he gets him, he tries to rescue him, he brings him up, he can't go through the ice, he lets him go, he finds him, he goes back for him. You're
it's true
to life. How have you made this so laboured?
But we don't want true to life.
No.
Otherwise, we just go and do,
we go and jump in a frozen lake. Yeah.
It's directed by John Dahl, by the way, who, you know, is directed some really good films. Red Rock West, Lost Seduction. I love Lost Seduction.
Yeah.
So it's disappointing.
That is a shame. Yeah.
Oh well,
it's a shame.
American Rust begins on Sky Atlantic and now on the 28th of November at 10:05 p.m. But there's lots of other stuff out this week, isn't there, Boydie? Lots of things. So Hawkeye, lots of things we haven't been able to review. So Hawkeye drops on Disney Plus on the 24th of November. We'll be talking about that next week, but that unfortunately is embargoed. If you enjoyed the first half of the Masters of the Universe Revelation animation, which of course Beth watched because it's animation,
of course it is.
Then the second half of that drops on the 23rd of November on Netflix. Power Book 2 Ghost Season 2, not to be confused with Power Book 3 or Power Book 4, both of which I believe are coming. I'm very confused by this, but anyway, Power Book 2 Ghost Season 2 drops on Stars Play on the 21st. If anyone was a child of the 90s and remembers watching Games Master back in the day, that's coming back.
I love the fact that you put Games Master.
I'm going to mention Games Master because Games Master, a revival of Games Master. I don't know if Dominic Diamond's going to be in this one, but
no,
probably not.
But I'll tell you who is.
Go on.
Sir Trevor McDonald.
Sir Trevor, yes, he's playing the Games Master head, isn't he? Yes, that's right. So Games Master's coming to YouTube. That's on the 21st. Hannah is getting a third and final season on Prime Video. That's on the 24th. I never actually finished season two of Hannah. I liked the first season a lot, but I never persisted with season two. But the third season of that drops on the 24th. The Beatles Get Back.
Come on.
Yes.
Which come on, people.
Peter Jackson. Yeah. Yes. I want to say six parts, or is it three
parts?
Three parts.
You may want to say six parts, but
I may want to say so. It's 6 hours, is where I'm confused. So it's 6 hours. It's three parts, 6 hours, 3 2-hour episodes. It's Peter Jackson's documentary about the Beatles. Have you seen it, Boydie?
No, I can't wait.
I'm really excited
absolutely
for this.
Absolutely furious that I wasn't invited to the special screening in which everyone special was.
Maybe it's because you were at Russell Tovey's birthday party.
Well, yeah, that starts on Thursday, which I think is Thanksgiving. So that's like that's why it's an ongoing consecutive nights, because it's just tailored for the American holiday rather than if people are wondering what the fuck is going on with that.
Speaking of invites, guess you got invited to the Witcher season 2 premiere. Yeah.
Are you going to go, Beth? Are you going to go?
Of course I'm going to fucking go. Have I seen it? Never. Am I going to go? Yes, I am. Imagine me going into that having never seen it.
I the thought of you at the Witcher season 2 premiere delights me.
James doesn't need to go to the premiere because he's seen it all already.
I've seen every single one four times.
I can neither confirm nor deny that is true.
Also, you haven't, and other things as well, by the way, there's a show called True Story, which is, this is a real mystery Netflix show where they do not tell anyone about it at all. There's no screeners available, but it stars like Kevin Hart and Wesley Snipes, and it's a drama created by Eric Newman of Narcos and Narcos Mexico fame. And it's all about what happens when Kevin Hart plays a world famous comedian who stops off in his hometown in Philadelphia and has a wild evening with his brother, played by Wesley Snipes, and then his life falls apart. It sounds quite interesting.
I've seen the thumbnail for it and he looks very serious.
Yeah, it looks quite an intense drama rather than kind of comedy or anything, like Kevin Hart doing drama.
Yeah.
But Netflix have completely like ignoring it. As far as I can make out. So
does this mean it's not going to air and actually it will be on Paramount Plus at some point next year?
I mean, possibly. It's like, I think it's like seven parts, and that starts on Friday. That arrives on Friday.
Well, I don't know, Boyd. Just because it says so in Heat Magazine does not mean it's going to be on.
Don't you say that. And you let the big one, Selling Sunset.
Oh my God, I forgot about
this. Wednesday the 24th, Netflix, Christine, Chrishell, Heather, Vanessa, newbies.
What are you talking
about? It's all happening. Yes, fantastic. Selling Sunset, the greatest.
What is our pick of the week?
Oh, Hellbound.
Yeah, I'd have to say Hellbound.
Haven't seen it? Wheel of Time for me. Oh, God. Well, I guess that is it for this week's show. So, as ever, please consider us when doling out your 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. It takes no time at all. And every one of you who has yet to leave us one will be visited by one of Hellbound's smoke monsters within the next 7 days. You can find us on social media at James C. Dyer, at Beth K. Webb, and at Boyd Hilton. And you can find us in your ears same time next week when we will be able to talk about Hawkeye, as well as quite possibly Child's Play spin-off Chucky, and I think Girls in the Wilderness Adventure Yellow Jackets as well. So, exciting times. Pilot out.